I've been reading a terrific book for the last couple of days. I would have to call it my book of the week. It's called Newsflash: Journalism, Infotainment, and the Bottom Line Business of Broadcast News. This is a book that you're going to hear about here today on this show, but I don't think you're going to hear about a lot on television, because the television networks are not going to want you to read this book, because this tells the real inside story about how TV news works in the United States of America, both at the ABC, NBC, CBS corporate level, and also at the CNN, Fox News Channel, MSNBC level. The woman who wrote the book is named Bonnie Anderson, a 27-year news veteran, winner of 7 Emmy Awards, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, who has worked in print, and also spent 10 years at NBC News and close to 10 at CNN. And this is a terrific behind-the-scenes book about the news industry. Bonnie, welcome to the Paul Harris Show.
Thank you so much, Paul, and thanks for being brave enough to do what the networks won't do, which is to discuss issues that are immensely important to the people in this country.
Absolutely. Now, my first question for you, having read most of the book here, is does truth matter in television news?
Does it matter today? No. And that's why I wrote the book. For crying out loud, a free press is a pillar of democracy and one of the strongest pillars. And we must, along with being able to give people the truth and give them information to allow the public to make their own decisions, we have to do everything we can to preserve that public trust. And that is not happening anymore. It's the bottom line dollar. It's the corporations that want money above all else. They're sacrificing all of the things that are so important to journalism.
Now, you say that they're sacrificing everything that's important to journalism, but aren't they just giving people what they want? And isn't that really what comes down to the bottom line? Should television news be about giving people what they want or what they need?
Well, there, you just answered your question. Of course, to stay in business, you have to give people a bit about what they want. And I'm not saying that news can't be a profitable business. What I am saying is there does come a time when making so much profit at the expense of actually informing the public is truly obscene. We have to walk a fine line between giving people what they want and what they need. And what we have not seen in recent years is giving people what they need. This country was blindsided by 9/11. Why? Well, because for many years leading up to 9/11, newscasts and news networks were too busy covering O.J. Simpson for, you know, from gavel to gavel. And we've seen in recent years, we've seen Lacey Peterson. Larry King did 46 hours of Lacey Peterson last year. You see, you know, Chandra Levy, we're going to watch out. We've got Michael Jackson coming up, Kobe Bryant coming up. We're getting, people are being lured to watching so-called news networks and news programs by these soap operas, this reality soap opera, when what they're not getting is the information they need to know. Why weren't the networks years ago talking about the terrorist threats? Why weren't they investigating terrorist cells in this country? Why weren't they reporting to the American public about how U.S. policy overseas has impacted the reputation this country has overseas? They weren't doing it because they were too busy doing fluff and telling you about Survivor on CBS Morning News and on the Friends closer on NBC. They're all doing the same thing. They've infused infotainment, and they're confusing the public, and this is why this is my call to arms. I have risked my career, and I believe strongly that the American public needs to wake up and say, hey, we need better news. Our founding fathers, you know, made sure that we would have this, and it's time for us now to raise some hell.
About 6 months before 9/11, back in 2001, I had Walter Cronkite on this show. We've talked many times through the years, the respected anchorman and TV newsman, and I guess you'd have to say icon.
Absolutely.
And he was saying that the American news networks are not paying nearly enough attention to what's going on overseas, and particularly to the problems in the Middle East. And, of course, that came back to bite them, as you're saying, on 9/11. After 9/11, did they do a better job, and are they still doing a better job today?
They did a much better job after 9/11. And one of the things I do want to point out, I'm not just sitting here trashing all TV news networks. There have been shining moments. I think 9/11 coverage was spectacular almost across the board. But although we started hearing a lot more about Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda even became a word that most Americans, you know, now know, and prior to that, they had no clue who Al-Qaeda was. It is, we've fallen right back into the same old patterns because it's all about getting viewers interested and keeping their eyes on the TV set longer and longer so that advertising rates go up and so that the networks make more money. The networks don't care about the public's right to know anymore because they have been purchased by these mega corporations who only care about the bottom line. I quote Cronkite in my book. He is an icon, and he would not have been hired today. He would not have been hired today because he is not flashy enough, not handsome enough, and certainly not young enough. And that should be an eye-opener to everybody.
Let's talk about the casting of television news, as you call it, and other people have called it. You write about this in your book because this was one of your jobs at CNN, recruiting people to come work for the network, right?
Right. I had been an on-camera correspondent for 20 years, and then I helped launch CNN in Espanol as a managing editor. I had a good eye for talent and the ability to teach people to do what I had to learn through. I'm not a natural. I was never a natural person on camera. And so I had to learn it the hard way. And as a result, I can really communicate with folks who I'm trying to teach to be on camera. So, yeah, my job, my last job at CNN as vice president was to find what I felt the best, the brightest journalists in the nation. But I also saw it as my mission is, you know, let's make sure the staff reflects the nation. And that's what wasn't happening a great deal of the time.
But in your book, you say that CNN got to a point where the best and the brightest didn't really matter as long as they looked good.
Absolutely. I have an email from the number two guy at Turner Broadcasting at the time, Garth Ancier, who had been brought to CNN or to Turner Broadcasting to oversee programming and all talent decisions. And this is a guy who had been president of NBC News, NBC Entertainment, forgive me, no news involved there. Yeah, I mean, wonderful resume for the entertainment world, but this wasn't CEN. This was CNN, Cable News Network. And this fellow really had absolutely no idea what a journalist was. And in my very first meeting with him, because he now, once he got there, he had to do all the final approvals for anchors and correspondents, the first question out of his mouth to me is, what's a journalist? And I mean, I truly thought he was kidding, and I started to laugh, and when I turned around and looked at him, I realized he wasn't kidding.
Mm.
And that sent a chill up my spine that I cannot even begin to explain.
I have no
words for that kind of thing. But the truth is, here's a guy from Hollywood who believes that you don't have to be a doctor to play one on TV, so you certainly don't have to be a journalist to play one on TV.
And that's what I would was to him. They were playing TV news.
Yeah. I mean, I call them news actors and news actresses. And when I'm feeling a little less kind, I call them news bimbos and news bunnies. But the truth is, you know, and we laugh because if we didn't, we'd all be crying. But these are people who were being cast, not hired because they have experience. I mean, the same day that I met with this fellow, he had sent me an email saying, we want to see only younger and more attractive anchors on CNN who project credibility. Not have it. Heaven forbid they have it, because if they have it, if they have it, Paul, that means that they've spent time in the business, and it's going to show on their faces.
Yeah, yeah. And aging on television is that's a mortal sin, right?
Absolutely. And if you take a look, again, I have not been able to find any statistics to back this up. So what I did was just simply put out in my book a list of correspondents and anchors, all of whom above 40, who were all let go within a year of the arrival of the Hollywood group. And it's probably 50, 60 people, folks whose names resound with journalism. I mean, the Bernie Shaws and the Ralph Begleiters and the Frank Sesnos and people who truly are first-class journalists, they're no longer on the air. Why? Well, you decide. I mean, it just you know, you take a look at who's on the air now, and I'm not going to say that all the young kids are not good. That's not fair to say. You know, I was a young correspondent at some time. I think you need a mix of old and young. You need a diversity mix. You need a mix of educational backgrounds. You need religious diversity. It's all of these things that help reflect the country that where this news is going to, or in the case of CNN, the world. That is not being seen.
Do you want to name the names of anybody who got a job there that you don't think deserved to get a job there?
You know, it's boy, Let's put it this way. I do remember there was one very, very attractive young woman who was hired for Headline News who was immensely attractive. And over the course of the first 3 or 4 months on air, she made some of here are two of the examples I give in the book. She was talking about an event happening in New Mexico. She pronounced the city Albuquerque. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what kind of cave do you have to have, lived in? When she was talking about a national dog show and one of the dogs that had won some award, she called it a chihuahua.
That's right out of the Les Nessman School of Journalism.
Absolutely. So it's, the names I name are of the managers because they're the folks, the executives, who are the ones who I think are 100% responsible for what is happening.
What background did these people have, the ones who got hired, the bubble-headed bleach blondes, as Don Henley once called them? Where did they come from if they didn't have a journalism background? Were they actors and actresses?
Well, I mean, in one case, CNN did hire a former actress, and that was Andrea Thompson. And although people are probably stunned to hear me say this, I interviewed her, and this woman was more of a news hound than anyone I have seen at CNN before or since. This is somebody who, by 6 a.m., had read the New York Times and the Washington Post and everything else. Could she have been a major force in journalism? Yeah, but there were a lot of news snobs, and I'm trying not to be a news snob, but by the same token, there are plenty of folks who have no business telling you and me what is happening in the world. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was watching TV, and I flipped through all the different channels, and I watch a lot more of some networks, such as Fox, than I would ever care to, just to be honest. And I came across an anchor woman, a young news actress, and if I could remember which network it was on, I would tell you, because I do name names. But one of the things she said was, the first terrorist attack against the United States, U.S. interests, was Pan Am 103. And I was looking around. I was throwing everything I had within arm reach at my TV set. This was somebody who had no clue, who was probably in kindergarten when I was in Beirut in 1983 for the bombing of the U.S. Marine base, in 84 for the embassy bombings, both of them there, the Achille Lauro with Leon Klinghoffer being killed. The list of terrorist attacks against the United States prior to Pan Am 103 is immense. And here is somebody, though, who just sat, had her hair beautifully coiffed, great makeup, looked good, and had the IQ of a kumquat.
To go back to Andrea Thompson for just a minute, she was just fine on NYPD Blue. I thought when she got to CNN Headline News and was plopped into a primetime slot there, it was clear from the very beginning that she was in over her head. And the thing that bothered me about that wasn't that she was an actress being given a shot as an anchor woman. It was that she was being given a shot on a national network as her first gig. She later went on to do local TV news in Phoenix, and for all I know may still be doing it. I don't know.
Well, actually, she did that beforehand.
Oh, she did?
Literally had 2 to 3 years of experience beforehand.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, and I saw her tape, and I saw her under some really difficult news experiences, especially in small local markets. And she performed quite well.
Okay.
I would not have wanted to be in her position for a second, because it was, she walked into a shop that showed her nothing but animosity. And I will say, was it the most brilliant hiring decision CNN made? No, absolutely not. But is this somebody who, frankly, she's also an older woman, I might add.
Yes.
Is this somebody with the brain power and the knowledge of news? She had a lot more of that than many of the people who are being hired. But because of her previous experience, people did not give her a break, and she literally, was paired with anchors who wanted to do nothing else but to make her life difficult. Mm. I'll just be honest with you there.
Okay.
And I know this coming from me, so the so-called news purist. This sounds so odd, but this is a person who knows news and appreciates news and gave up a gazillion-dollar career to do this.
Yeah. Speaking of anchors, when we talk about Tom Brokaw giving way later this year to Brian Williams, Dan Rather still hanging around in his mid-60s, Peter Jennings, I don't know how old he is, but he's been there for a long, long time. Do these guys and the network half-hour evening newscasts matter anymore?
I have to say yes. And I believe they could matter a lot more, and I believe they could be a lot more relevant, and I believe they can all do a much better job. Their ratings have all gone down the tubes in the last 10 years. But sure, they matter. I mean, this is broadcast television. This is, you know, these are the public airwaves. And, you know, what I would like to see is them going back to the days when they did the news, as Cronkite did, because it was a public service. When 20, 25 years ago, before any of these newscasts made money, they didn't make money, and that was fine. And this was a public service, and the organizations, the companies that owned these news organizations wore the red ink with pride. That is being hampered now. I mean, it is a whole new world that we do have cable, and we do have a lot of programs out there that pretend to be news but aren't. The inside editions and things like that, where you have somebody who looks like an anchor and sits in an anchor desk and reads a teleprompter, but does not have to abide by the same ethics as the rest of us do. And basically, the lines are being blurred. But, you know, what I will also ask you, aside from Barbara Walters, you've just named three, very prime.
And maybe how it should work. The book is called News Flash, Journalism, Infotainment, and the Bottom Line Business of Broadcast News. Bonnie Anderson back in a moment on the Paul Harris Show. Talking with Bonnie Anderson, author of a great book called News Flash about the television news industry. And she says, don't worry about whether the media has a liberal bias or a conservative bias. Their only bias is money. Right, Bonnie?
Absolutely. That's the bottom line.
And when it comes down to saving money on closing bureaus or paying people less because they're younger than somebody who's been around with years and years of experience, if it goes to the bottom line, and in that case it goes to the shareholders' pocketbooks, that's all that matters.
Well, now, and it also improves the stock options that are given to the managers, the senior executives, and their bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you've got people who, many of whom, and I will say this, started out in the business with for the right reasons, but then we're corrupted by the incredible salaries, and especially in the TV news business, the salaries, the stock options, the bonuses, and who have decided to cave in to the mega corporation, their bosses, who say, gee, let's put on somebody on the air such as Anderson Cooper, who was a journalist at one point, but then became the host of The Mole. And while he was still hosting The Mole, you saw him appear on CNN as a news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break.
Do you think once they cross that line into entertainment, they should never cross back?
You know, I'm old-fashioned in that way. I think integrity means everything, and I believe credibility is what we have. If you don't believe us, if you think that our motives are different from simply informing the public, then we're all in trouble. And the truth is that the credibility numbers in all the surveys for television news and the media in particular have never been lower, and with good reason. There are some surveys even out by the Pew Research Center for People in the Press that are pretty amazing, that even when they interview journalists, you have the journalists agreeing that the bottom line pressure impacts them. So you've got news reporters in local TV stations and at networks who realize that they're caving in because the companies want to make a larger profit.
For a long time, we have all seen local TV stations doing sweeps-related stories about network shows that were airing. You know, if it's the Frasier finale, then for the week beforehand, we got one of our reporters to go out and interview Kelsey Grammer or Perry Gilpin about it. That's been going on for years and years and years. This may be the first year I can remember a network devoting a two-hour primetime news magazine
right
to a television network finale. And they did it on NBC Dateline with both Frasier and Friends.
I mean, this is where we're really getting to a point where things are at a, this is very critical. When you have, again, these are news shows. This is not an entertainment show. You know, I watch Entertainment Tonight, and I love entertainment programming. I don't think I've missed a West Wing or an ER or some of the other things. And Americans and people around the world deserve entertainment. But the problem is that there is not a strict line, a defined line, between what is news and what is entertainment, and between what entertainment is and what is opinion. On the Today Show, when you have them during the Friends finale spending weeks promoting the end of this show and interviewing everybody on the program or who's ever been on the program, again, this is news division time that is being used A, for entertainment, but B, to promote a product on the same network.
Yeah, but 60 Minutes has been doing fluff stories for a long time. Not fluff stories, but celebrity stories. You know, they'll do a profile of Tiger Woods or or Tom Hanks or whoever. Is that wrong? Should Don Hewitt never have done that?
No, you know, it depends on who you're profiling and what the percentage of your newscast or your program is. I mean, 60 Minutes has become far more celebrity ridden in the last few years than ever before, and that pains me to see, because this was a you know, a program of such high integrity, but then comes along Datelines and the other shows just like that that do nothing more than this, or very little more than this, and they feel they have to compete for ratings. And again, it comes down to money rather than the people's right to know.
You mentioned a few moments ago the word opinion, and I think this is where one of the fuzziest lines exists in especially television news. I mean, I do a show. It's a talk show. I express my opinions. My listeners express their opinions. I'm not a journalist. I never claim to be objective about anything.
Absolutely.
But if you're a reporter and you're going out and objectively covering something, and then you're on one of these TV roundtables or one of these talking head pundit shows, or even on your own network where the anchor person tosses it back to you with a question, and you're now being forced to express your opinion and give commentary, is that over the line, Bonnie?
No question. I mean, that is so far over the line, it's not even a question. And the bottom line is that any reporter who's asked his opinion by an anchor or anyone else should just say, hey, I'm a journalist. What I believe and what I think is totally irrelevant. Our training, I mean, we're all human beings. We all have strong feelings about a number of controversial issues, but that is not our job. It is not our responsibility. We're given, the media in this country is given incredible protection and special protections and rights under the First Amendment. So that what we have to do is we must take a higher moral ground. I haven't given money to Save the Whales, and I love whales. I've never given money to a political campaign. I haven't even bought Girl Scout cookies, for crying out loud, because I never know if I'm going to be called on to do a report about the Girl Scouts.
And yet we have a world where Dan Rather goes and speaks at Democratic fundraisers, and other people go and show up at book signings by this person or another person, and they have parties in their home, and they're inviting those people. But that reporter who you said should say to the anchor person, look, I'm a journalist, and my opinion doesn't matter, wouldn't that pretty much be that person's last day on that newscast?
You know, perhaps, and I also would wonder that, you know, wouldn't that reporter be able to look at himself or herself in the mirror the next day? It depends on your motivations for getting into the business. And in the book, I mean, I'm not only just saying, here are the things that are wrong. I also have a chapter on, here's television well done, television news well done, to remind people in case we've forgotten what it looks like. But by the same token, I also have a prescription for how we can fix this. And the beginning part of it is to make sure that the people who are hired, who are in these jobs, are doing them for the right reasons. And the right reasons, you know, years ago, I hired, 4 or 5 years ago, I was interviewing some entry-level candidates for CNN. I happened to be down in South Florida and speaking at a university, and I always took time to interview entry-level candidates. And this young woman sat in front of me, and my first question always is, why do you want to be a journalist? And her answer was, because I want to be famous, and I want to be a celebrity, the center of attention, and I want to make a lot of money. And she was 2 weeks away from graduating from a journalism school. And not only did I tell her she would not be hired at CNN, but I urged her not to get into my profession. It's people who are getting into it for the wrong reasons that are not going to make the smart decisions or the ethical choices.
Yeah, but Garth Anstier probably wanted to hire her if she was hot.
You know what? She's probably anchoring in New York right now. I probably, it was the best thing I could have done for her is to say no to CNN, and she's now making $1 million and, you know, without knowing anything and actually, you know, being in the business for the wrong, they see it as acting and a route to celebrity. I have no compassion nor interest in journalists, TV journalists in particular, because it doesn't happen so much with radio or print, thank God. But anyone who thinks they're a star, that's just ridiculous. We are journalists. We don't do anything. We report about people who do.
All right, let's talk for a moment about when you were in front of the camera at a major story that everybody in America has burned into their consciousness, and that would be Waco.
Oh, boy.
You were out there for weeks and weeks and weeks covering a story like that. And
from the second day, I believe, until the last.
You were the primary daytime reporter for CNN on the air, what, 12, 14 hours a day, something like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, when you're covering a story like that, you get to know the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms guys and the various other government agencies. And when you're there, do you develop a kind of synergy with them where they're giving you information? And then, as a journalist, do you have an obligation to report everything you know?
Yes and no. And this is how you make sources in this business. People don't just walk up and say, here's my phone number. I'm on the tactical team here at Waco, and I want to tell you everything I know. It is a process of building confidence. And this meant after my, 12, 14, 16, 18-hour days, I would go back to the hotel where I was staying with my producer and my camera crew. We'd go into the bar, which all journalists do, and we'd have, a beer or two. And we started watching the tactical folks from ATF and FBI playing pool. So we'd take them on in pool. And after a while, we introduced ourselves. We started talking. They heard my name. They checked with people who had been on stories with me previously. And this is where integrity and reputation means everything. And the word back was that Bonnie can be trusted. And some of them were very, very worried about what was happening in the developments. So early on, and I would say within two or three weeks of the first, of the beginning of this standoff of 40 days or so, I knew early on that they had had tanks were being retrofitted to deliver the tear gas. I knew that there was a Cessna plane flying overhead equipped with infrared cameras. I knew that they had a robot that went up during the night that had cameras in it and listening devices. I knew that they had, when they were delivering milk to the compound, that there were listening devices inside this. I also knew, for example, that, that it was funny, that the ATF and FBI totally cleared everything around the compound with the exception of the flagpole. The flagpole that flew the Branch Davidian banner was still up there. And I kept saying, well, why aren't y'all, this is obviously something that gives them great pleasure. Why haven't you knocked it down? And I knew that the reason they hadn't is that the sharpshooters wanted the flag up there so that if they were called on, they could gauge wind speed and direction.
Wow.
Did we report this? No.
All of these things you just mentioned, you did not report, correct?
I did not report until the final day. Because, this is part of the judgment that journalists bring to a story. It is not my job to give information that is going to change the course of events either way. And I don't want to do anything that is going to cause death. I spoke with Tom Johnson, the chairman of CNN. There were only about four or five of us that I had shared this information with, all senior level CNN officials, and we all agreed that had we reported any of this, there was a chance it could have been heard within the compound. Although the electricity had been turned off, we didn't know if they had radio-powered TV or radio-powered radio. And it was responsible journalism to not report those things until we got to a point where it was absolutely, there was no way that this could hurt anything. My same sources told me when the final raid was going to happen. I was able to fly back to Atlanta and anchor CNN's coverage of the final, which we never anticipated, the entire fire and everything else. And it was only after the entire compound was completely in flames that I started reporting these things. And I feel very strongly. I mean, these are the types of decisions that ethical journalists must take. And you can question them afterwards. But, when folks think about the media covering wars, and you saw the whole embedding process during what's been happening in Iraq, there's always been this fear that, these damn reporters are going to report things that are going to put our soldiers in danger. Well, I mean, I'm here to tell you that there is not a single case, not one, of a U.S. military person ever being killed as a result of what reporters have reported or written or in any which way. We do, those of us who are very, very ethical, do care, and we try to make sure that we don't do that.
Does that mean Geraldo was right?
I can't imagine Geraldo being right about anything. I'm sorry, you
said the word ethical.
Touched on a fellow that I have absolutely no respect for.
Well, you said ethical, and so I had to bring Geraldo in just for the counterpoint there.
Ethical and Geraldo, they're in the same sentence. That's probably the first time that's ever happened.
All right, but I do have to bring up Eason Jordan, who was the vice president of news at CNN. I don't know what his official title
president
was.
President of news gathering.
Okay, he made many, many trips to Iraq before the war or over the course of the years during the Saddam Hussein reign. And he had done the same thing to Cuba under Fidel Castro, who still reigns there. He admitted in an op-ed piece, I think last year in the New York Times, that he had withheld information on atrocities going on in Iraq because he knew it would damage CNN's relationship with the government of Iraq. Now, where's the integrity there?
There isn't any. And I have to tell you, I was the most stunned person on earth. I have always liked Eason, always respected him. He was my supervisor for the last 6-7 months that I was at CNN, and as you'll read in the book, I give it to him on this one. This was just horrific. If we are news organizations, you do not withhold this kind of information. He had, he wrote afterwards, he was like, all right, now that Saddam is gone, I can tell you how some of his henchmen and his sons were pulling out the teeth of people and telling them, of news staff and others, and saying, you cannot even have any false teeth put in because we want you to remember what you did every time you look in the mirror. These are stories that I have to turn around and say, would Saddam have been kicked out of office or kicked out of the country years earlier had CNN done its job, which is to report? And this was, to me, this is horrific. This was a horrible example of the bottom line gone mad. CNN had this bureau in Baghdad after the first Gulf War. CNN was had built a great relationship with the Saddam regime, and this was a pathetic attempt and a sad attempt to have their bureau remain there. And who loses? The American people lose, and the people of the world who depend on CNN, because they're not getting the news they deserve to have, unfiltered and uncensored, and the people of Iraq lost. God knows how many people were tortured after all of this because no one knew.
Paul Harris talking with Bonnie Anderson. Her book is a great one called News Flash. She really goes after TV news. Bonnie, was Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming California's governor last year the perfect story for contemporary television news?
Oh, that's the best way to put it, Paul. I mean, this is just, it was, I have never seen a campaign covered in such a way where there was less substance. It was, you had the TV networks falling over themselves and the local TV stations, everybody falling over themselves to be documenting every moment in his life. And yet when he said, I'll tell you what my platform is when I think it's right, oh, okay, that's fine. This was, people more concerned about, and reporting about the Terminator or the Governator T-shirts than about what his platform was for Social Security or what he was going to do for the elderly or the people who have the small business owners who depend on electricity with all the electrical issues and power issues in California. This to me was the biggest smoke and mirrors I've ever seen. They were in love over his celebrity. This is a movie star. His wife's in television. We're just going to give him all of this free publicity. And as you know, television news ads cost a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure anybody could have won against him because of the shameful way that the TV news media handled this.
Let me talk about another big story you covered. I think it was probably in the early 90s when you did one of the first big stories on pedophile priests, which, of course, in the last 3 years have become big stories again. But what year was it that you did that story? Do you remember?
I believe it was 94.
94, okay. You did the story and I'm guessing caught a lot of flack from the Catholic Church. I know a lot of media organizations over the last few years, including my show, caught a lot of flack from the Catholic Church for talking about that topic. But then once it became the scandal on the scale that it was, they couldn't do anything to suppress it anymore. Did they try to suppress it when you were at CNN?
No question. And the interesting thing is that when I did this documentary, it was the first one-hour documentary in-depth look at priest pedophilia. I had the full support of the American Catholic Church to the extent that they allowed me into, with my camera crews and producers, and this is just not a me thing. I mean, you're in the business. You know that this is a team effort. But they let us go into St. Luke's and to some of their other treatment facilities where they treat pedophile priests. These were folks who truly believe the public needed to know these things. During the course of our documentary, which had been, by the way, assigned to me by the chairman of CNN, and I thought it was a great idea, I discovered that there was going to be a lawsuit filed against Cardinal Joseph Bernardin of Chicago. Cardinal Bernardin had been, in that time, speaking up, saying that he was going to do all these reforms and whatnot. But what the public didn't know is that there were members of his own parish, families, who had been destroyed because when they came forward saying that their sons had been abused in the Chicago Archdiocese, Bernardin not only shut them out, but he also was giving money to the priests to countersue the families. So we were reporting all of this. I interviewed the fellow. There was a fellow, Stephen Cook, who came forward to say that he had been abused personally, physically, and sexually abused by Cardinal Bernardin. You know, I'm a skeptic. I want to see proof. The guy was dying of AIDS. He had had some of his memories had been retrieved through hypnosis. I'm very, very suspect about the hypnosis thing. I had done a documentary, the first documentary on incest on the networks. But by the same token, realizing that many of the priests who are behind bars today also are behind bars because people came forward having retrieved the memories through hypnosis. Bottom line is we reported it in the most ethical fashion. I did not do a single story until the lawsuit was filed, and we did not do a single story until we had Cardinal Bernardin's response. And his, you know, and we allowed him to have his say, and in each and every story we did. All of a sudden, you know, CNN, I was getting high fives from the chairman of CNN the morning that, you know, the story broke, and all of a sudden calls coming in from the Vatican and from other sources, and CNN folded. CNN absolutely folded, and not only issued an apology to Cardinal Bernardin, but allowed him to be on air for 15 minutes, live, anytime he wanted, with any anchor he wanted. And, Paul, you know that this is just beyond belief.
Yep.
You know, what saddens me, my producer, by the way, quit. He'd been with CNN since the very beginning, and he was just so incredibly dismayed that he quit CNN. He's since gone back to CNN, but this is a guy of tremendous integrity. I wanted to continue fighting from the inside, but when I had the chairman tell me in the middle of the newsroom, in front, you know, the big CNN newsroom that you all see on those wide shots, you know, and in a loud voice, "Bonnie, the only cardinals we will ever report on again are little red birds," I knew that we were going to be in big trouble.
Bonnie, why aren't you on television today?
After everything you've heard me say, do you suppose any of these networks would actually hire me? And you know what, I turn around and I think, if somebody had the guts, if a news organization, whether it's a local station or a network, truly wanted to get back to what's important in this country, and I do believe that there's a huge market for it, I think the American public is hungry for news of the Cronkite type, then hire me and let me then do and find the right staff and let's do news the way it should be. But the truth is I'm their worst nightmare. I am telling you about the fake live shots. I'm telling you about, you know, the bias within networks. And it's not a political bias, but they're just biased towards different things. I'll also tell you that in the past couple of days, CNN has filed papers in court compelling me or trying to compel me to hand over all the drafts of the book, reveal my sources. They want access to my hard drive. They want all of my medical records for the last 10 years.
Well, how can they do that? Well, what business is that of theirs?
Well, they're very concerned about this book, and they're going to try to they're on a fishing expedition to try to discredit me. And you know, and the bottom line is fine. You know, I am doing what I decided to do when I was 9 years old. When that was, I want to be a journalist. I grew up in South America. I want to tell the truth. And I believe so strongly in the First Amendment and in democracy. My dad was killed in a firing squad when I was 5 years old by Fidel Castro, for the simple crime that he was an American. That would not have happened. That would not have happened had there been a free press. I've lived in a country where there was no democracy, and I value the democracy here. So if CNN thinks that, you know, a journalist who's been, you know, spent 10, 15 years as a war correspondent, been through all of this, a journalist who won Emmys for them, helped launch a network for them, you know, set up their entire recruiting and talent development department, they now say I'm not credible? Okay. Let's go head-to-head. This is, you know, I feel like David and Goliath, only it's David Goliath and all of his big brothers.
I will challenge any executive from CNN to come on this show and rebut all these things that you said today, and I will welcome you back to talk about them anytime. It is a fascinating book and a great behind-the-scenes book, and what's disturbing to me as a person who's worked in this part of the media for more than a quarter century and who has a wife who worked in television news for quite a few years is that the movies broadcast news and network are no longer fiction. They are the reality.
Is that not the truth?
They are the reality of television news in the year 2004. Bonnie, thank you for your time today. I know that no television network is having you on, although you told me during the break that Dennis Miller is going to have you on his MSNBC show. And the fact that or CNBC or whatever network he's on, I think it's MSNBC, and the simple fact that Dennis Miller has a one-hour show on a television news network tells you everything you need to know about what Bonnie's saying here. I hope that he treats you well, and I hope that other people read the book because it is a great read. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Paul. I mean, all I want to do is create a debate in this country. I don't expect people to agree with everything I've written, and if you're liberal, you're going to hate some of the stuff I've written, and if you're conservative, you will too. But let's create a debate. It's not my job to tell you how to think. It's to give you the information so that you can make up your own mind.
And as Bonnie says, the bottom line here is that the only bias in the media is the bottom line, the almighty dollar. Thank you again, Bonnie.
My pleasure.